Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Couple wakes up one morning. The guy says to his wife, "What a party I went to last night. Right here in the neighborhood. Good food, good people, good conversation. Best thing of all, they had a golden toilet." She says, "You're crazy. No such thing. I'm telling you, they had a golden toilet." They go to the house where the party was, knocking on the door. The lady answers, "Excuse me, ma'am, would you please show my wife the golden toilet?" She says, "Hey, Harry, here's the guy who wrecked your tuba."
Hey, man, welcome to the Big Bad Broadcast, dude.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Big Bad Broadcast. We got a great show for you today. We have the regulars here. We have Mike Grief.
Hey, how you doing? All right, everybody.
And we got Craig Mitchell, the producer, the cook, and the all-around funny guy. Give him a round of applause. Yes.
Woo! Yeah, a nice round. A nice round.
Yeah, that's great. We're glad you're here, Craig. Okay.
Me too.
And we got a great guest for you. We have a comedy legend, in my opinion. Kathy Ladman is here, so give her a round of applause.
Yay. Oh, thank you, guys.
Yay. All right. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much.
Kathy is one of the original funny women in New York in the comedy scene.
In the world. God, I know. So I can't believe how long ago it was.
I know. It's just crazy. It's so you started with, see if I can go back to it. You started probably with, let me see if I guess it. You tell me if I'm right, right?
Okay.
Abby Stein.
Yes.
Carol Leifer.
They were a little before. I started in 81. They were a little bit before I started.
Right.
Well, Carol started around when you started, John, like in the Coliseum with the Emperor, you know.
Thanks.
Late 70s, perhaps? Did you start late 70s?
I started in like late mid 70s.
The 1270s. Wow. The 1270s.
John was big during the Black Plague. No, I'm just saying.
You guys are so nice to each other.
I know. He had the disappearing toga trick.
A little respect.
It's just a joke. I'm sick
of the older people. But anyway, so was that, I know that you know Jan Karam, right?
Yes. So as a matter of fact, she and I always used to be, when I had dark hair.
You looked alike.
We were often mistaken for one another.
Yes, on your comedy special, you and Jen could be the same person.
You mean the one night stand?
Yeah, the one night stand.
Yes, I know. I had all that dark hair, yeah.
I just watched that recently.
Well, then John's there. Are we going to hear Kathy's the stand-up? Don't we have a clip of the stand-up?
We do. We do. You want to hear it now?
Yeah, being that John is John's
frozen.
Yeah,
John's frozen. Yeah,
he's back at the Coliseum. Let's play Kathy's stand-up.
Here we go.
Our next guest is a comedy legend who has influenced generations of comedians, making her 10th appearance on The Tonight Show. Please welcome the very funny Kathy Ladman.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Thank you. So I guess you noticed that I have gray hair. Yes. And I like it. I really love it. It's very low maintenance. Plus, I've noticed that I get a lot more looks from guys now that my hair is gray. Yes. And I think I know why. I think it's because they think I can't get pregnant. Guys like that. Yeah. So I have a daughter, she's 19, very interesting age. She hates me, so she's right on track developmentally. The only thing she likes to do with me is go to Costco. And I love Costco. A lot of people love Costco. But I've realized that at this stage in my life, it doesn't even make sense for me to go there because there's nothing I can buy there that I'll live to finish. I can't use that many Q-tips. Every time I'm there with my daughter and we're leaving, I always point to the cart and I look at her and I say, someday this will all be yours. This is my legacy.
Great stuff. Yeah, great stuff.
I can Thanks. Relate. Wow, that is so funny. That's so I can definitely relate to that. We were just talking about this before. I think I tore my rotator cuff putting on my shirt the other day.
Ow.
You know, that's how you know you're old.
I know. You know how else you know you're old? When your music is playing in elevators.
Oh, yeah.
That's really sad. Then I know I have to start making end of life decisions. Yeah.
No, that pisses me off when all the music that I love is all called classic. Now it's all classic.
But elevators is worse than classic. Elevators is Muzak.
Yeah, that's that Muzak, and it's all without. Yeah. Oh God, and it still can't get used to the. You get pulled over by a cop. He's 14 years old. The baseball players are 12 and a half. You know, I mean, they all look so young. They didn't look that young.
It's crazy. Do you know? I have to say, I have never been pulled over by a cop ever. I have never gotten a moving violation ever.
Wow. I've not only gotten moving violations, I get violated when I'm standing still. It doesn't. If you look like me, you will get pulled over.
You will get violated.
Yeah, I guess I got a ticket once, but I got out of it at court. It's funny you talk about people looking young. The worst is like when you go to the doctor and the doctor says he's 12.
Oh, I know. It's insane. Oh, my God. It's real. And you have to trust them because they've just been through medical school. I mean, just. And, you know, but it does feel very odd. I mean, yes, it feels incredibly odd. We're all pretty much at the same stage in our lives now.
I had to get a hip replacement, and I went in there, and the doctor came walking in, and he had on like one of those little Pee Wee Herman suits.
Well, tell the whole story, John. John didn't have a bad hip; he just wanted a replacement.
He came walking in this little Pee Wee Herman suit with red sneakers, no socks, and I go, oh, it must be the x-ray technician, and the first words out of his mouth is, he goes, I know I look really young, but I do 1,000 of these a year.
Wow. So that was your surgeon?
Yeah, and he was great. I mean, he was amazing, but it's just so funny when you go there and you see these doctors.
I know. I had cataract surgery last year. Anybody have that yet?
No, not yet.
That scares me more than anything in the world.
What?
That scares me more
than anything. Why? Why would that scare you more than anything?
It's so fascinating because you're awake when it's happening.
I know. That's what scares me.
It's so interesting, though.
Why would they keep you awake? I mean, can't you even move or something like that? I mean, it would.
No, because your eyes have to be open and you have to be able to look in different directions. Yeah, you have to participate.
Does it hurt?
They just numb you. They give you a little bit of a sedative, but yeah, you have to be awake.
That must be a really weird sensation, man. You're just laying there and it's like you're like a zombie. You can't move and there's like. People doing stuff.
Don't you have to put your chin on that little thing? Are you?
No, that's the eye exam you're thinking of. You're lying for cataract surgery. Oh, okay. You're lying on your back.
I had to get that done on March 25th. Now I'm getting scared.
Oh, don't be scared.
Don't be scared, Craig. You get a lollipop afterwards.
Oh, okay. I'm a
sucker. Right,
did you have cataracts in both eyes?
Yes, but I had it worse in one eye, and when I all of a sudden I realized that I was putting on my makeup one day and I closed one eye and I could not see anything. I mean, it was so blurry, and I said, "Well, yeah, this has gotten to the point of no return now." So I went in and for sure, you know, and that's what it was, and the other one had enough of a cataract, so I had them both done.
How do you see out of the bad eye now?
Fine.
That's
what I miss. I don't know if I miss my eyes more or my teeth. You know, that's another thing, getting to be this age. It's like, I need glasses when I read, glasses when I drive, you know. I can't eat
but when
an
you
apple.
Get cataract surgery, you can that you can improve upon that.
But I don't think I have cataracts. I just have, you know, I don't know what, just don't
bad
you,
vision. Do you wear prescription lenses?
Yeah, these are like reading whatever, but yeah, I have prescription.
But
I
have sunglasses all the time, Mike?
Those are reading
most of
glasses?
The time, yeah.
Wait. Oh. Those dark sunglasses are reading glasses? What,
believe it or believe, yeah, they're
a motorcycle or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
I never knew.
What do
that.
You think? I wouldn't be able to see you if I mean I can't just
with all the fear of cataracts and doctors, I can't believe I'm saying this. I went to the dentist for the first time in 12 years last week.
That's why your eyes are so
bad.
Oh,
my God.
And you know what? You can have young doctors, old. Yeah, but here's the thing. I opened my mouth. He looks in and he went, whoa.
Wow. That's not good.
It was like Fonzie. Whoa. Yeah.
Wow.
I saw dollar signs click in his eyes, too.
Well, yeah, people are very afraid to go to the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer terrified. You wait, the scarier it gets. I mean, I'm very obsessed with taking care of my teeth.
See, I'm more afraid of the bill. I mean, like, what? I have dental insurance, and it's still like a coupon.
You got to take care of your teeth. I mean, like, this is your one chance.
I brush them once a month, whether they need it or not.
Wow.
Oh God, it's so disgusting.
Yeah, he said I had no cavities though, and he goes, how come you have no cavities? I go, I don't eat sugar. He went, oh, okay.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, so this conversation is so deteriorated to the point.
It had deteriorated. I was about to go into periodontal disease.
20 years ago, we would have been talking about what agents suck, how we trying to get booked, and now we're talking about how we're falling apart.
That's it.
I think it's more about maintenance than falling apart.
No, right. You are. I'm just joking. I mean, it is about maintenance. It's like I go to the gym 5-6 days a week just because I don't want to let myself, you know, I don't want to be 70 years old and you know, have to be in a wheelchair or all that stuff. You know, I mean, it is about maintenance. You.
I'm going to this new thing now called Stretch Lab.
What?
The greatest thing. Yeah, ever.
Is that for Peyronie's disease?
God, that is so horrible. When did that become so popular? This guy brings vegetables to his doctor's office.
What? He's got to get his carrot fixed. I hate that.
It's true. It's like you see nothing but commercials for that. And I'm going the same thing. I'm going, geez, how many guys are affected by this?
Apparently, it's an epidemic.
Well, I don't even know what you're talking about.
You don't want to know.
It's when a guy's penis curves.
Yeah.
To one side. And so the guy is in his doctor's office and he brings in a cucumber.
Oh,
and like, you know, who's bringing produce to the doctor's
office?
I mean,
actually, if I had that, I wouldn't even want to get rid of it. It would make me different than everyone's like, hey, check it out. Look at this. It's got a curve. You know, I don't know. But it's amazing to me. It's like, you know, they can't cure cancer. They can't cure all these whatever. But,
I know, and they're concentrating on that.
But a couple of billionaires couldn't get an erection, and there's 14 medicines for ED now.
Exactly. And I hate to say it, but, you know, the squeaky penis gets the grease.
That's a great...
Oh, man. Yeah. Mine isn't like curved. Indian. Mine's more like a knuckleball.
So I saw a commercial. I saw a commercial the other day for some pill a woman can take for hot flashes.
Mm-hmm.
And it got all done with the side effects. And one of the side effects were hot flashes.
Hot flashes. Oh, yeah, I know.
That's a side effect. You're taking a medicine to stop it, and that's one of the side effects. It makes no sense.
Well, if you see the commercials for any medication, the side effects are worse than the disease half the time. You know,
But this is all lawyers at that point. You know, they just are covering their bases here.
The one that confuses me the most, and this is in all the commercials, and you guys have heard it, is they go, please tell your doctor if you've had a liver transplant. I think he fucking knows. I mean, I'm maybe the big scar across my abdomen. Maybe that's a hint.
Or don't take if you're allergic to. How the fuck do I know if I'm allergic to it?
Don't take Ozempic if you're allergic to Ozempic or whatever. Yeah.
How do you know you're allergic?
Like you said, it's all lawyers. It's all like Paul Provenza used to do a bit in his act about how he's standing online buying a bottle of Windex when he looked at the ingredients because he never ever had time to look at it. And he said, in Windex, it's 98% water, 1% alcohol, and I guess the other 1% is blue shit. He goes, and it's $5 for a bottle, because when they put this out, they never realized that some idiot was going to spray it in his eyes and would have to put that on, thinking to himself, well, it cleans tar and bugs off my windshield. Maybe it'll be good for my contacts.
Squeak. I mean, do you remember when that woman had spilled McDonald's coffee in her lap?
And then
after that, that's when they started putting the warning on cups of coffee, particularly McDonald's, that this contains a hot beverage.
Yes. But apparently she had second and third degree burns, though.
Well, that was because she was wearing, I believe she was wearing like sweatpants or something. So
wearing an electric blanket.
It stayed.
That's so crazy.
It is. Everything will keep it. And I know you, I hate that. I don't want to be morbid, but I know you probably knew Richard Lewis, right? I mean.
Yes.
I'm so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know he was sick and he wasn't happy being sick. And I guess that's the only upside of it. If there is an upside of it, that he's
relief.
On a positive note about him, I was telling these guys yesterday. Remember when Caroline's was on 8th Avenue?
Yes. In fact, Steve Middleman and I were just talking about.
Right.
When we went to see him.
I was telling these guys yesterday, Caroline said to me, you got to come in and see Richard Lewis live. So I went to see him, and I was telling these guys, it was the funniest stand-up I've ever seen anybody, especially in that room. He would just melt into that corner like this ball of neuroses, like he was afraid to come out.
And he had his yellow legal pads and I remember him talking that night about his parents. When they would have sex, they would go down in a sex elevator to the center of the earth.
When I saw him, he was talking about how he goes, I'm staying in a hotel up the block because I got to be able to see where the club is, because I don't like to go where I don't know. The guys take me over the Verrazano Bridge, back to the George Washington. He goes, and I get out, and he goes, and my tape recorder falls out of my pocket. He goes, and then I hear it. He goes, I'm sorry, your tape recorder broke, Mr. Lewis. How does he know my name? He must have seen me on TV. He goes, I got to become De Niro. Are you talking to me? How do you know my name?
I don't even know if that was a routine. I think that was really a routine. I think that was all real with him. He just was a neurotic. He was like everyone's neurotic, whatever, all balled into one person.
He was
wonderful. And I was reading that he is really the person who started talking about therapy and really popularized therapy. And I ended up going to a lot of the comics actually ended up going to the therapist that he went to. So there was somebody who serviced our community because of Richard.
When I was starting out, there was three comics that everybody, I mean, with the pinnacle of, I guess I have to say male comedy, but it was Jerry Seinfeld, Paul Reiser, and Richard Lewis. Those were the three titans that when I started doing comedy that everybody was they were the hottest comics. They were everywhere.
I have Richard Lewis story.
Let's hear it.
This was early in his career. He a friend of his told this story to us, and he went with Richard to a bowling alley in Brooklyn where he was doing stand up at a bowling alley, and there were these really rough looking guys in the front, like biker guys, and he's doing his act and he's dying. And so he turns to the audience. He says to one of these guys, what do you do? And the guy says, I do this. And he stands up and he takes the mic cord and he cuts it with a big knife. I do this.
If John was there, he could have repaired it for him.
Rule number one, never ask a question you don't have the answer already for.
God.
You know, that's funny too. I mean, you said when you saw him in Caroline's, I don't know why. I mean, we've all seen so many comics in our life, but I don't know why that was so memorable. Like, I just remember walking out of there going, this is the funniest guy I've ever seen in my life in this club.
Wow. He was so wonderful to see live. I don't know if you saw, I had posted on Facebook I had heard about him, but I hadn't seen him. Right. And one night he was on Letterman, and I'm watching him, and I was in my apartment, and where my TV was, like, anyway, I was like on the edge of my bed watching, lying on my bed watching him on my little black and white TV, and he's telling Dave about his family being not very spontaneous. And he said, well, one summer we were driving cross country and we're pulling out of our driveway in New Jersey. And I heard something jingling in the front seat. And I asked my mom what it was. And she said, oh, nothing, nothing. It was the toll to the Golden Gate Bridge.
You know what I'd like? I mean, you've had an awesome career, and I always like to know, just for my own edification, like, what would you consider like one of those moments that were like just that a job you did, like either a TV show or stand up, that was just like, wow, this is just magic. I mean, is there any like?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, it's funny because at every point it's different. Like, I remember the first time that I got recognized. It was on the 104 bus going up 8th Avenue. Somebody had seen me at the Triple Inn. Do you remember the Triple Inn? In the West 50s, on like I think it was 54th Street. And they had seen me that past weekend there. And that to me was thrilling.
Yeah.
But and you know, at every point in my career, something else became the thrill. And of course, I mean, doing my first Tonight Show was incredible. It was incredibly exciting.
That was my ultimate dream, was to do the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
It was everybody's dream.
It was everybody's dream.
Well, I never got to do Letterman, and I really wanted to do Letterman. So we all have things that we don't get to do, you know.
It's funny how you say that, because I remember. Do you remember the comic strip in Fort Lauderdale? Did you ever?
I never worked.
Okay, but I remember.
I heard about it.
But I remember doing. I remember doing that. There was no airfare.
Yes.
In this horrible condo.
Yes.
And it was $600 a week. But I remember getting on the plane to go there, thinking to myself, "Man, I've made it.
I've arrived
out of New York to go someplace to do else besides New York to do stand up." You know what I mean?
Yes.
It was like a big moment, you know.
It is, go ahead, Kathy. Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, but my first out of town gig was the Atlanta Punchline that Jerry Stanley booked.
Oh, right. Wow!
And it was a 6 or 7 night gig. I think it was a 6 night. It could have been a 7 night gig, and it was $250.
Right.
$250 for a week.
I'm really impressed that Jerry Stanley booked that, because by the time I worked for him, he only did one-nighters in Jersey. Like the goal.
Well, that's when he started doing one-nighters.
This was the only road gig that he booked.
Oh, yeah. But those, I remember they were awesome. Those first times when you got paid for doing comedy. And I remember the first time, and I'm thinking, like, are they going to actually pay me? You know, and you're done. And you're like thinking, oh, man, I don't know. Because I think all comics have that low self-esteem, you know, do I really deserve that? you know, but
I think just, my biggest moment that I can remember was I was working at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, and I think it was a catch room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the new one with the big lion head in front.
Yeah.
And when I was flying in at night, I could see my name on the billboard in Vegas.
Wow.
And that was like, I was like, I'm in Vegas.
You know what right, I mean?
It was like, I couldn't believe it. You know?
Yes.
I've had
similar experiences to that too. Yeah. It's pretty weird. Like, yeah. Like I was opening for the Pointer Sisters at Caesar's Palace, and I'm driving into Vegas, and I see like the signs on the 15, and and it said Kathy Ladman, the Pointer Sisters, Kathy Ladman. I thought, well, that doesn't seem right. That's not where my name.
I'm so
belongs.
Jealous. That must be an awesome sight.
Yeah, I mean, these guys. I one time I was working for Rick Morgan, and I was driving out to the North Fork of Long Island.
Rick Morgan will put your name up in.
No, lights. And no, and there was a sign outside the place.
Yeah,
it was me, Dave Feynman, and another comic, and it just said "The Fats of Comedy."
The Fats of Comedy.
My name was on.
Oh my god.
All right, welcome your first fat bastard.
That's what I was talking about. There's three fat guys.
I love it. I just remembered, and I'm not even, this is was going to a gig. I was going to a gig some, I forget where, but it was with John. Remember John Trusen, obviously. And we get to this place, and then the parking lot is just full of motorcycles and pickup trucks. And I'm thinking, okay, I can deal with the, you know, whatever. And we get in there, and the first thing the guy says, we said, what are comics? And the guy says, oh, I'm glad they sent some big guys after what happened last week.
Oh, shit.
Oh, great.
Like, okay,
that's great to hear.
Kathy, I wanted to ask you though.
Yes.
When you were on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, right?
Yes.
I just wondered if you could go back to the day. How did it feel? I mean, you know, what was the thought process? What was going through your mind when you did that?
Well, okay. First of all, the first time I was booked to do it, I was booked with Johnny, and I got bumped.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Because Harry Anderson went two segments.
So you went through all the nerves and everything, and then got bumped.
Yeah. That was hard. So I did a little crying after that. You know, there was a lot of I needed to release all of that adrenaline, and I cried a little bit after that. And then I was rebooked fairly soon after that, but with Jay. And which was good because I knew Jay and I knew I was going to be able to do panel with him. So I did it twice with Jay. And then the second time I'm doing it with Jay, I'm backstage with Jim McCauley, who was the segment producer at the time. And the band's playing and the guy's standing back with us, you know, getting ready to page the curtain for me. And Jim is saying, you know, we really would like you to do the show with Johnny. And I said, well, I really want to do panel though. I don't want to take a step backwards after I've done it with Jay. And so we're going back and forth. And I said, do you think we could talk about this another time? Because I was about to step out onto the stage. And so anyway, ultimately what happened is that they said, yes, you can do it with Johnny. You can do panel. So the first time I did the Tonight Show with Johnny, I went over to the couch and he said, you're very funny. He said, how long have you been doing this? And I said, I can't believe I thought I said this 8.5 long years. I thought that was a long time. And and he said, you're getting very good at it. And I said, thanks. So are you. My knee jerk reaction was to respond to what I thought was a very condescending comment on his part. And if I had thought about it, would I have said that? I don't know, but I'm glad I didn't think about it. I'm glad I said it. And, you know, he loved it and the audience loved it and it was fine. Everybody was remained unscathed. But he was very gracious. He was a very gracious host. I mean, he was very old school. He had a very different view of women than, you know, because he was from a different generation. So there was that. But I would say he was a very kind, gracious host, always set his guest up to look great. He was a terrific interviewer. And he was also really shy. I remember like running into him back in the makeup room one time that I was on. And you could tell there was like a somewhat of a slight discomfort about him. you know.
Everybody said so that.
I found so that really.
I see that with a lot of like people who are just they're so public out there, but they're introverted when they're not in the public eye.
It's funny.
Yeah, and I remember hearing him talk about the fact that he had imposter syndrome like everybody else in the business. Really thought I don't deserve this. Yeah, so they're going to find out about me one day. They're going to find out that I can't deliver the goods.
And, 20 something years later.
Yeah.
I remember once when Rory Rosengarten was my manager, and I went to the Tonight Show with Robert Klein. So I was in California doing something else.
Right.
And before the show, Macaulay was there and he goes, "Hey, why don't you go sit at the desk?" And I was like, "No." he was like, "What?" And he started laughing and he goes, "There's not one comedian that will ever sit at that desk until
really?
The show." He goes, and I always say to comics, "You want to go sit at the desk?" Because I always go, they're going to go, "No." It was like he goes, "I think they think it would be jinx them." And I go, "You can't sit at the desk until you're invited to the desk."
Nobody but the king sits on the throne, man.
Yeah, look at this. I mean, you guys, I'll show it to you, but I guess I'll explain what it is. It's a mug with my picture on it.
Right.
When I was about to do my last Tonight Show with Johnny, he has that mug on his on his desk with his picture, in essence, drawing of his face. And so I thought I wanted to give him a gift. So I had a mug made at a mall with my picture on it. And he was very gracious. He accepted it, blah, blah, blah. So several months later, I went to the Tonight Show with Jimmy Brogan. He was going to do the show and wandering around backstage. And I don't know why I opened the supply closet backstage and there's my mug. And I went to the stage manager. I said, what's going on? Why is this here? He goes, "Kathy," he says, "he can't possibly take home all the gifts that he gets from people."
Right.
So I said, "Well, can I take this home?" And he said, "Sure." So now I have the mug that I gave to him.
Can I see the mug again?
So you have something. You have something. A possession of Johnny Carson's because gave it him. So it was his.
Actually, is that you or Jen Karam? Not really sure.
Yes, that is I. That is indeed I.
Well, Jen used to be part of our show, so it's said with love.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She was a co-host for a while. Yeah, we love Jen. Matter of fact, we're going to have her back on soon. I reached out to her, but I got to lock her down on a date. We love Jan.
You reached out to her, so she dropped the order protection. That's nice. Good. All right, cool.
Yeah. So now that my picture is no longer in the post office.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I never did the Tonight Show, but I remember when Pat Sajak first came on, right?
Oh, right.
So I did that show with Dick Clark and Morgan Fairchild.
Uh-huh.
I remember it was like the first week the show was on. So it was still before people realized it wasn't a good show. So they still had really good numbers, And I remember standing there like that was like the first probably the first show that I did where I wasn't on a show with like five other comics.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And it's funny, too, because if you have a good set, even on a show that's not good, you get a lot out of it.
Great piece of tape, yeah.
But I was standing there waiting to go on. It made me think of it when you said that we're getting ready to page the curtain.
Yes.
And Rory's got me by the lapels, and he's talking to me. He's giving me this pep talk. He's going, "Look, man, there's a million comics that want to be here, but you're here because they wanted you, and you can't." he's giving me this whole. He's going, he goes.
Like Burgess Meredith and Rocky.
Yeah. You're a 200-pound Italian tank.
He's going, the only way you can screw this up is if you talk too fast. Talk slow. If you think you're talking too, he's giving me this whole big thing. And he goes, "If the audience is with you, just play to the band." And he's just giving me all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, let's go. And just the guy walks over to page the curtain. And the other guy goes, He goes, the line counts in. We're at 6 million. And I was like, just like,
oh, right, wow.
Before, like right before you walk out.
That's
like,
not good.
Oh, wow.
My God.
Well, you know,
what's the matter? Do you like a more intimate room?
You know, Kathy, you're the guest. Go, please go.
When I did the Tonight Show, I used to play to my brother-in-law and my sister and my brother-in-law in their house. That's what when I looked into the camera, that's what I was seeing. I was seeing them in their den.
When I did Saturday Night Live, I did the one bit where we were live, and we did the blocking, we did the camera block, then we did blocking, then we did the run through, then we did the dress rehearsal. So by the time you get to the live show, it's kind of like, you know, here we go again. But I don't know who it was. It was somebody backstage. It might have been a stage manager. We're about to go out, and he goes, all right, guys, you're doing this for 11 million people. Go. And I'm like,
Thanks,
you know. But, you know, it's still, you're in this tiny little room with one camera, and it doesn't feel like this 11 million people.
Right, right. You just can't think about that.
Well, that's what I love about the old sitcoms, and I've done a bunch of sitcoms that when they do when they tape them in front of a live audience, you know, some of them they pre-record whatever, but when I used to love, because we're stand-ups, so it's like I came alive in front of that live audience, and you know, it was like it just always gave more. At least I've always felt it gave more life to my performances.
And you knew how to hold for a laugh too.
Exactly. But definitely.
The problem that Sajak show was that the audience was pretty far away from you, and then there was a wall of cameras.
Oh yeah.
So it was, you know, you had 100 feet between you and the audience.
Conan was like that too.
So Rory, he was a good manager. Rory said, this is not going to work. I need him right next to the band. And they moved my set right next to the band.
Oh,
wow.
And he said, just play to the band. You know what I mean? And they'll laugh and, you know, and then you'll get a feeling for
good
the
for him.
Yeah, the musicians always laugh because they're high.
That happened to Matt Gillis this weekend when he was on Saturday Night Live.
Shane Gillis?
Matt Gillis. Yeah, Matt Gillis is a friend of mine. You know, so you can go, oh, thanks for the mention, Craig. No, but yeah, Shane Gillis did a stand-up, and I never saw this before, or at least I never noticed it. The band behind him was stone-faced. Usually, they're always, like, laughing.
On the cruise ships, they put the band behind you, and I always tell them to close the curtain. And they're closing the curtain, the band looks at you like, what? And I go, hey, guys, I just don't want to see you doing the shoulders all through my act, where you just go, the shoulders, it's ridiculous.
You know, I was on Wheel of Fortune, speaking of Pat Sajak, when I was moving out to LA in 1985, and so I auditioned for a bunch of game shows, and I got chosen to be on Wheel of Fortune, and I knew I needed a car because I didn't have a car. So I said, I'm going to win a car. I'm going to win a car. And I won a car.
Wow. So you're on as a contestant, not a celebrity.
No. This was in 85. I mean,
that's great. I won a car at a hockey game once.
Did you really?
Taking the puck through a hole.
I won a car, but I like to tell myself that it was actually, I did 3-5 for.
You do a lot of jokes about that, Mike. Were you in jail ever?
I can't really talk about it.
Okay.
He's so full of shit.
I'm the guy who looks like I've been in jail, you know.
Right. What are your tats? What are those?
Well, motorcycle. Here's the Grim Reaper on Harley.
Look at that. Okay.
Here's another. Yeah, skulls. And because I think I was about 20 or 18 or whatever. And the guy's like, what do you like? And so I said, you know, skulls and snakes. And he just drew it on my arm. And
you are available for children's parties.
And you just trusted that? If something permanent? You know what? Like, all right, I'll do that.
Quaaludes will make you trust anything.
I guess.
And you know something? We Mike is like, it's so funny because this whole image of him, he's like, he's this little Jewish boy with a heart of gold.
Little Jewish boy?
Yeah, you are.
David.
He has a heart of gold, and he just comes off as this tough guy. It's the funniest.
What do you want? I'm on a motorcycle already.
That was my choice.
Am I right or am I wrong? Be honest.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah.
You have the heart of gold, and you are nothing like the image that you.
Well, he knows where to find the bagels. He knows the bagels. He goes.
People never expected Jewish bikers, but I used to ride with a whole bunch of guys. We called ourselves the deli men.
Non-Jew here. No, John's also not Jewish.
I'm 11% Jewish. I just had my
DNA. Are you? 11%.
Yes, yeah, 11%. And they cut that off when he was a little baby.
Yeah, now I'm 9.5%.
No, it's just me and you, Kathy, and I'm like the most unexpected Jew there is.
I was married to a Jewish woman for a long time.
Oh, were you? Yeah.
Yes.
That doesn't change what you are, John.
Oddly enough, it felt like it at times.
I took this DNA test, you know, my whole life. My father was German, mother's Irish. So I'm like, I even had German-Irish jokes in my act. And I find out that I'm 46% Italian. Where the hell did that come from?
The other 40% is creepy. Oh, I'm 10% lurker. I like the lurk.
Yes. I'm 4% Aegean, which is Greek. So
now wait. So Craig, you're in LA?
I'm in Van Nuys.
You're Van Nuys.
Van Nuys. That's how you say it when you're upper class. Van Nuys.
And Mike, you're in where?
Hiding. I'm up in the Antelope Valley.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. And John, you're in New York?
I'm in Florida.
Oh, you're in Florida. Oh, I'm so nobody's in New York, and we all sound
Cocoa,
like this.
I'm near.
Well, we're all New Yorkers.
Look, yeah. John,
Cocoa
legally
here. I dream of Dreamy Boulevard.
Yeah, John is legally has to legally be in Florida just to raise the medium IQ. That's why he's there.
Where did you grow up, Kathy? Where are you from?
Little Neck, Queens.
Oh, Little Neck.
Okay, I grew up in Long Island City.
Levittown.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And where did you other guys? Where did you grow up?
Levittown,
Long Island.
Levittown, and where on Long Island, John?
Seaford.
Seaford. Yeah, oh, he's a rich boy. My dad owned a bowling alley in Massapequa Park.
Oh, really?
300 Bowl was the name of it on Sunrise Highway.
On Sunrise Highway, right?
Oh my God! Mm-hmm. I probably bowled there.
I actually know where that was.
I was quite the bowler.
Although I lived in Seaford, it was really like I went to like Levittown School District.
Oh, like John's, right on John's dad border. Was big in show business. What was your dad? Was a manager, right? Your grandfather. Who did your grandfather? He handled like huge name celebrities, right?
Handled, some people you heard of. Abbott and Costello.
Some people you heard of.
Seriously?
He handled the Marx Brothers.
No Mary kidding.
Mary Tyler Moore is my second cousin. He got her started.
Mary Tyler Moore. John's related to Mary Tyler Moore, yeah.
And he used to say to me all the time, he's going, it's just a shame. He goes, 10 years ago, I could have just picked up the phone.
No. Oh, God. Now I can't literally pick up the phone.
Yeah. It's, and, you know, I was the golden child, too, because he had three daughters.
Oh.
So, yeah, he would have done anything for
me. So did you start comedy in Long Island or in Queens? Or?
I started in New York, in Manhattan.
In Manhattan, right? Well, so what was there back in the
Good Times. I think
Good Times.
Was the improv
and all those places were around, right?
Yep.
Yes, but I started at a lower level club. I took a stand-up class, and then my teacher said I should go to he sent everybody to Good Times when he felt we were ready, right. And I met on that first night I met Paul Lyons and Rob Ross, and I'm still with them today.
Wow, I haven't heard of him in a
Paul week. Lyons is the greatest Barney Fife impression ever.
Yes, he does.
Oh my God. He does more than that, but that's the first name that comes to mind when I think of Paul Lyons.
So I started there, and then I went up to Catch in the comic strip, and I never really became an improv act.
Did you ever work at the Eagle Tavern? Really, because that's where Mike and I started. The Eagle Tavern.
Well, there was that?
It was somewhere down in the
meat cutting district or something like that.
Never worked there.
You know, it was like little, they had like pictures of old people on the wall and just a little light bulb for a spotlight. It was like
the worst part about working at the comic strip was trying to get past Lucian.
I know. Yes.
You don't want to know my nickname for him.
He used to come up with the most bizarre things. Like he would just look at me and he'd go, you know, John, the ancient Thelusians felt they could build a rubber chicken out of a pineapple.
You want to hear it? Here's my Lucian story. So I come off. He's Lucian. Watching me. I come off stage at the comic strip, and people are. I mean, it's literally. I had one guy wanted to take a picture with me. Somebody's asking for my order. I mean, I killed. And so Lucian comes over and then he starts asking if I have any movies or anything I'm whatever. Finally, it comes down to like, well, I can't really use you. I have a big guy already.
Yeah, he would do that.
I'm like, oh,
oh my God. Well, you know, that's kind of what it felt like at times to be, you know, a woman in comedy. You would be told, well, we can't put you on that show because we have a woman on that show. Yeah, or a girl. True. Let me be more specific.
A girl. Yeah,
that sucks. A girl on that show already.
My hat is off to you because I know women had to fight 10 times as hard, you know, because it's like, first of all, there were a lot less because nobody encouraged it.
Right.
You know, but you, I'm so... you know, like just so glad that funny women stuck it out and didn't go, it's not worth it, you know, because right. You go through a lot of shit to get successful in comedy.
And you have to be twice as funny to make it. And that's also bullshit, but you know, it's impressive, you know, like some of my favorite comedians are like, oh God, I mean, I worked with Margaret Smith and Patty.
I love Margaret.
Margaret was my first gig out of town. I worked with Margaret and she was so, I didn't know what I was doing.
So right. She used to have a motorcycle. Margaret Smith had a motorcycle.
She
used to ride it out to the East Side Comedy Club.
My kind of joke, man.
Oh, yeah.
So who was at, you know, we were talking about Lucian. Who was at Catch? Who was the guy at Catch?
When I was there.
Billy?
He died. What was his name?
No, when I was there, comics, Adrian Tolsch and JJ Wall were kind of running, they were running the shows there.
Right.
And then Louis Ferranda was and then he became, obviously, then he went to Caroline's and became.
So I was headlining all of their, remember they had rooms all over the country, Catch?
Yes.
So I was headlining them all, but I never really worked the room in New York that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, they said to me, you know, you should really work the New York room a little bit more since we're sending you all over the country.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I went in there one night, and I'll never forget this. It was on St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there because I was doing something else, and I had a late spot. It was like 12:30 or something. Mm-hmm. And there was like four people in the audience. It was the worst show I have ever had in my life.
Oh, wow.
And I was so embarrassed.
You can't judge yourself by four people, John.
But no. I was so embarrassed that I walked on stage and Louis said to me, he goes, well, and I go, hey, man. And I shook his hand and I said, thanks. That's the best set I've ever had. And I walked out the door. At 2:00 in the morning, I got a call from Rory. John, what the fuck happened? And I go, what? He goes, he hates you.
how can he hate you by an audience of four?
So Rory goes to him, I don't think you really saw what he does. You know, give him a spot on the weekend.
Yeah.
My better judgment, you know. And I killed it on the weekend, you know. And I walked off, and he looked at me like, you fucked me over, man.
There were some fun weeks, I didn't know what to say.
I was so embarrassed because it was like, you know, even when you have a small crowd, sometimes you still feel like you did the job.
Yes, yes.
This was like, no, this was like they hated me.
I have a Lucian story. When I was at the comic strip, I had passed. He put me on like at 2 in the morning on a Thursday. And I go up. I mean, Jetta Jones was my MC, and she get you know, she just says, she was like, good luck. And she puts me up, and there's just a table of four people up front, and that was it. So I got off the stage with the microphone. I sat at the table and I was doing like close up comedy to them. And we had a great freaking time for like 20 minutes. And I'm like, okay, that's my time. And I left. And afterward, Lucian goes, you know, Craig, there's only a couple of comics that would actually do that. Robin Williams comes to mind. And I think he might have said Paul Provenza. He goes, and both of them are not you. He Lucian, was not exactly happy with it.
Or as I like to call him, Robert Goulet with AIDS. Lucian. No, I mean.
Oh, that's horrible.
Do you know what the secret to getting Lucian's good side, though, was he's a huge baseball fan. And I was working for the Mets and doing stuff. And I brought him a baseball encyclopedia that was signed by Bob Murphy or something. And I got all these great spots because of that. So
what were you doing for always the Mets? Eating.
I was a sportscaster. I worked for Sports Phone. I worked for another outlet. And I was doing during the 90s too. Yeah.
Oh, what fun.
He was always eating Chinese food.
Yeah, but I loved going to Kathy. Like, I think injured. I was on. Do you remember? I think it was Mondays or it might have been, but I think Mike Sweeney had a show called Mrs. Sweeney's something. He'd dress up in a dress and just.
Really?
Catch was fun like that. They would have these weird nights where they would just do weird stuff. I mean, I never got to work Catch a Rising Star, but I would go there and you know, hang out with guys I knew, you know, hang out with Colin Quinn and all these guys.
I worked at the new Catch, not the
Mike
old.
Mike Sweeney. There was just so many Rich Franchet. It was
Catch
just
was
all
really
these.
Really an exciting place. It was.
So, Kathy, are you a Met fan?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mets.
I am a Met fan.
Yeah,
but
my sympathy.
You know, being in Los Angeles for as long as I've been here, I also root for the Dodgers too.
I can't anymore. They're too rich now. I can't.
I know. That's how my dad felt about the Yankees. He felt that they just were just buying all their
best
tech.
Team that money could buy. Yeah.
I love the Dodgers when they had Garvey and Russell. I love the 70s and 80s Dodgers, but this current Dodgers is just like, no thanks.
It's you so mean funny. Because it's of Ohtani like, and the deal that he got?
Yamamoto and Glass now, and like this is an all-star team there. It's
you know what though? After I watch them, I'm like hungry for more baseball an hour later. No, stop it. That's so racist.
Oh man.
It's so funny. It's so funny. We've had her on the show, and I Sue Kalinske.
Oh, I love Sue. She's one of my best friends.
I love Sue.
So Sue and I, years ago, we were the comedy commandos for Coors Beer.
Yes.
And it was us and these other Midwest guys. And she would just go to them, I'm only going on the road with John Ferentino. Because we could talk. But boy, she knows more about sports than any person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, she's really savvy.
Yeah, it's incredible. She would just talk to me about like, I don't know. We were on a plane once and she just started talking stats about like every football,
I
every
love
jet player.
No, she is so, yeah. I mean, you know, she grew up with, she has three brothers and a sister, I think a lot of the fact that she grew up around brothers.
Oh yeah. That's what she says.
Yeah.
But I think she's doing a podcast now with somebody from ESPN,
Steve Mason.
Right?
Steve Mason. Yeah. Yeah.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know what's great about your whole group of comics, that women comics that you guys came up with, I have a lot of respect for, because it was all good jokes. Like so many female comics after that, just like it was just, I don't know.
It was just like the guys.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, I always say, like, your comedy, Sue Kalinske's comedy.
Clever, smart.
A guy could do that act. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas many women are like, you know, periods and minstrels.
I know. It's really,
I'll tell you a funny story at work.
Which is as bad as a guy talking about his private stuff. Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't want to hear that shit. Be smart, you know.
Yeah.
I was working with Chris Rush once, right? Mm-hmm. Remember Chris Rush?
Yes, we love Chris Rush.
I don't remember.
He had bald guy.
Bald Italian
the
guy. Genius. Genius.
So he was just the funniest comic in the world. He really was. And like when I met George Carlin, George Carlin goes, you know, Chris Rush? I go, yeah. He goes, is he still telling everyone he writes for me? And I go, yeah. I go, yeah. He goes, well, he does. but anyway, we were at a show once, and this middle act, the girl went on, woman went on. And the whole thing was, it was a Saturday night. It was just about periods and menstrual cycles and all this stuff. Yeah. And Chris Rush comes walking out and he goes, so let's have a round of applause for whatever her name was. And they get a big round of applause. And he goes, you know, it's a Saturday night. You may be here with your family and you may be here with your date. And her act kind of went kind of personal. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I just don't know if that really has a place on a Saturday night show with a mixed crowd, and it gets an applause break. Mm-hmm. And he says, I would like to add a little footnote to that, though. If it wasn't for the invention of these products, women would be able to be tracked through deep snow by wolves.
Oh, my God.
See, and I love Chris, and this is one thing, though, I've never been a fan of. I've never been a fan of tearing.
Where did that come from?
It's I've never so been a fan of tearing up it's the so community Carlin-y. For me.
I'm sorry, never, what, Mike?
I said, I love Chris. I mean, he's passed away, but I loved him. He was actually a friend. I love, but I never was a fan of anyone who would go on and then tear up the comic before them. I never liked that.
Yeah, I think that's that. I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah, I do too. And it's so out of, and you know, it was so out of character for him. But I think he just thought that this joke was like so brilliant.
You know, it's so funny. You say he was a genius. And the only joke I remember basically of his is he said, he goes, you know, whales have a penis the size of a telephone pole. So if you're ever swimming in the ocean and you suddenly hear, chances are, oh, I wear a silly, he goes, get out or you'll die like a finger puppet.
Oh my god!
Just so weird. Yeah, no, he used to do that whole thing about New York and being 24 hours and stuff like that. And it's just, he was all.
Brilliant comic.
He was brilliant.
I mean, he was the professor of comedy. You know, his comedy was like a lecture that was just really funny. I can't believe you don't know him. That's a shame because he was really, you know.
Yeah,
and it's very funny because he always said, he goes, it's very funny. He goes, I have. Most of my comedy is really highbrow, but when people remember my act, they remember the lowest parameters of any joke I've ever told.
So I know we must be getting near time. I wanted to say, Kathy, do you have anything coming up? Are you working on it? I know you just did some big project.
Well, I just did a performance of my solo show this past weekend. I'm going to be doing it again in May. In Los Angeles at the Whitefire Theater. It's called Ooh. This Show Make Me Look Fat.
Right.
I love the name.
And it's actually about my recovery, my struggle with and recovery from anorexia. Not so funny, guys, huh?
Well, no, I'm recovering bulimic, and that's not a joke. I really am. So I can relate. I've done everything.
Yeah, so I mean,
it's not funny, but it's true.
I thought I was a bulimic, but it turned out I just drank too much.
Oh no!
Oh no! I'm not making fun of.
But the show is funny. The show is funny, but it's also got its serious points too. And I'm about to embark on to the East Coast, where I'm going to be doing a handful of performing arts centers. Excellent. In Savannah, Georgia, and in North Carolina.
Very cool. If you're listening out there, go see Kathy. She is
funny.
She is incredible.
Look her up on the internet. There's so much comedy. It's just brilliant. Just really, really funny. I love the fact, I was saying to somebody the other day, that I think that you get more joke laughs per minute than most female comics I have ever seen.
Now, why must you qualify that?
I was just going to say that. Why do you have to qualify it? Just comics.
Because I think it's more of a, no, in this case, I think it's more of a compliment.
Okay.
I think it's more of a compliment because, and I'm not backpedaling here at all. I mean, I just think it's.
I'm not backflipping it.
I've played your set for my girlfriend, and she's getting a little older now too, and she was crying. I mean, she was crying laughing.
I'm sure Chris is going to be delighted to tell that you told everyone.
She's getting older. Sorry, Chris.
We're all getting older.
And I related immediately to
you. Laughed so hard about the makeup.
You come out on the Tonight Show and you talk about your gray hair, and I let my hair go gray like 10 years ago. I was just like, F it. And you're right. It's low maintenance, and this is who I am.
I love having gray hair. I love it. Guys, you've been so great. Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for lowering your standards and being with us.
Take care. Be well. All right.
Bye, everybody. Let's have a round of applause with Kathy Levin.
Thank you, Kathy.
Guys.
And make sure you watch her on the internet. And let's have a round of applause for Mike Greif.
Yeah.
And Craig Mitchell.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Come back.
My name is John Fertino. Come back next week.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
see what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.